in which he could see death. Death comes, birth comes, life comes, growth comes. For you to be of any use to someone that is dying, for me to be of any use, there is one simple rule. You work on yourself. You don't work on the other person. We have a model that is so deeply ingrained in us often as professionals. You're healing someone else. You're doing for the old people. You're doing for the young people. You're doing for the dying people. I have a very simple rule in my life: work on myself. Because all I can offer to you or to a dying person or to a marital problem or to some child, I can only offer my being, and my being is the result of everything I've done in my life to get to where I am. That's all I have to offer. I have my love to offer. But if you can flip through those channels, that love is not conditional love. It's not based on individual differences. It's merely the love because you're seeing the divine plan made manifest again. Every moment of your life, once you understand the purpose of it, is your vehicle for awakening. This moment is your vehicle for awakening. If you're uncomfortable at this moment, okay, you're uncomfortable. Allow it. If you're fascinated, fascinated. Be fascinated. Allow it. Give it space. Give it space. Imagine a picture, and the picture is a picture of a cloud. And if the cloud fills the whole picture frame, all you see is the cloud, and you're totally immersed in the cloud. But allow a little teeny bit of blue sky around the edge of the cloud, and then imagine identifying with the blue sky instead of the cloud. From that point, you can say, ah, cloud. The difference between I'm depressed or I'm depressed versus wow, am I depressed? Or I'm depressed versus look at that depression. Whew. Boy, I don't think I'll ever get through that one. Wow, that's a heavy one. Boy, that's the worst depression I've ever seen. I don't think people live through those kind. Now, the second kind I'm doing is showing the ability to keep a sense of humor in the middle of the depression. Well, if you've got a sense of humor, how depressed could you be? See? See? But that's the issue. It's the issue of the tiny bit of spaciousness that surrounds the identity with the happenings of life, the experiences of life. It is said in the spirit mystic literature, one to me is loss and gain. One to me is fame and shame. One to me is pleasure and pain. Meaning, there's fame. Hello, Ram Das. That's fame. Ram who? Das, did you say? Don Das, yes. Right. Oh, you're that horrible guy that was, that's shame. Oh. You just won the lottery? That's gain. Wallet just stolen? Loss. Oh. Pleasure. Oh, my darling, come here. Oh, my leg hurts. In each one, they take you completely, get lost in it. I'm somebody who has a hurt leg. Versus here I am, and there's a leg that hurts. The predicament is that most of us don't want this kind of consciousness because we don't want to lose the rushes or the trips of life. We don't want to forego the romanticism. We don't want to forego the rush that comes from identifying with our own melodrama. And that kind of equanimity, that kind of quietness, that kind of spaciousness, that kind of presence, that kind of compassion for oneself and for all things, because from a quiet, clear place, you see how it all is without pushing or pulling. For it is only the non-attached mind that can truly appreciate how it is. Otherwise, you're just seeing the projections of your own desires. If you're hungry and you go down the street, you will notice restaurants. If your car is making a strange knock, you will notice gas stations. If you are horny, you will notice makeable people. And that is what your universe is full of. Because you and I are living in entirely different universes, because each individual is living in a universe created of selecting from the possible infinity of things, those things which lock in with your own desire system. So if you identify with a desire, that will determine what you see in the world. When you get to the point that you can allow a desire system without identifying with it, sure, I have lust. Sure, I have greed. Sure, I have fear. Sure, I have depression. But here I am. I am. I am, and there's an aging body, and I am, and there's depression. And I am, and there's hope, and I am, and there's planning, and I am, and there's death. How different the space. That's because the television channels, you're living on more than one of them simultaneously. You're starting to live on all of them, all at once. There are some very heavy processes that occur at the time of death. And the Tibetan Buddhists, for example, understood that the meaning of life was the preparation for death. You were preparing to stay conscious through these incredibly heavy processes that happen. Heavy process, example. A fellow called me the other day, his mother just died. He's a meditator, he's a Buddhist, meditative person. He sat with her through the process. He said at first she protested, then she acquiesced. He said then it got to the point where she was too weak to eat, so I had to feed her. And he said that we made fun of that. We thought, well, I used to be the child, you used to feed me, now you're the child and I'm feeding you. And that was kind of fun and playful. Then it got to the point where she lost her sphincter control and her bowel control, and I found myself carrying her to the toilet with her feces dripping down my leg. And that was a hard one for us. And then it got to the point where all of her unconscious processes started to rise to the surface, and I found in the middle of the night sometimes she would be calling to me, and I'd go over and she'd start to make love to me. And all of the Oedipal stuff was coming up. And he said, and through it all, we still kept the thread. We still kept the thread of consciousness with one another. It's not the physical death that's so scary, it's the psychological death. It's the ceasing to be who you think you are. The thread was held. And I have been now with many people and just holding them as they die. And being right with them, looking in their eyes as the spirit just leaves, as they just leave, and the last breath occurs and the eyes glaze over and the being just leaves. And there's just a release, an opening. Because by the time they got to that moment, they were no longer clinging to that which dies. Don't be silly. Where could I go? There's no more clinging to that which died. For who we are was, is, and will be. And these are just processes of transformation that we're going through. Just like it's very hard for a prepubescent to understand the time will come when his baseball cards aren't that relevant. So the time will come when even our mortal coil isn't that relevant. I gave a scenario at the last workshop, and I like it because it's so explicit. It's a very heavy, far-out one, but I'll give it to you anyway. If you will just imagine somebody who has died, okay, and they died in the Western... I'll give you two people. One has died in the Western metaphor, see, so they're busy not dying. Doctor, save me, transplant me, implant me, do whatever you do, but don't let me die. But you're dead, then you die. And a voice says to you, hello. And you say, well, if I can hear a voice saying hello, I guess I didn't die. The voice says, no, you died. You say, well, I can't have died. And that's confusion. It's called purgatory in Christianity. And you just sort of hang in that place, and then you get reprogrammed into the next round. But now, as you go through incarnation after incarnation, on and on and on and on, somewhere along in the sequence of these, you begin to awaken just a little bit. And you get to the point where you begin to hear what I'm talking about, and you begin to see, wow, far out, that's all that happens when you die. So as you're dying this time, instead of, doctor, doctor, you say, wow, this is going to be great. Here we go. Ready? Put on your safety belt. Here I go. Ready or not? Oh, wow. Whew. Now you're dead, see? Somebody says hello, and you say hi. Now you're in a new predicament. You're still somebody. You're not nobody yet. You haven't finished your rounds of birth and death. So you're going to take another incarnation because you've got more stuff to do. You've got to go through more experiences. So you have a list of things you've got to go through, see? You say, gee, if I did it right, I could clean up all of these in one birth. All right. Let's see. If I took birth as a child in the poorest tribe in Africa, that would be good, because I'd clean up that one. That was the one I got from being that king 50 births ago when I misused that. Then let's see, if I, I'll get raped when I'm 9. That'll be beautiful. That would take care of that one, see. And then, see, I'll get syphilis at 13. I could die at 17 and clean the whole thing up. Far out. Okay. So now you've got a problem. You're all ready to do this. You've got your plan, and you put a little sign on you saying, this is all just a scenario. This isn't reality. You put a little scenario, a sign on it, and the sign says, I am somebody who wants to take this birth looking for two other people who need me, you know, karmically like I need them, you know. And the computers were and all kinds of things happen, and within a million or two Earth years, something comes up. Doesn't matter, you know, it's going on anyway. And these two people say, let's have a baby, or there's a moment of passion, and there you are. And as you're being born, you say to everybody, well, see you later. And you dive into Earth, and you go, wah, wah, and you're a baby. Veil over. You are a baby, that's all your reality is, a baby. 9 years old, you're raped, 13, syphilis, 17, you die, ah, no, I don't want to die, you're dead, you come up, and you say, everybody says, hi, back so soon, right, well, that cleaned up all those five, now. Is that too gross for you? From where I'm sitting, I've got to up-level it just one bit by just saying to you that since the reality that lies behind all these relative realities, there is no time, all your reincarnations are happening simultaneously. I mean, that's a little heavy for you, but you got to understand that it's not like it's spread out like Bridie Murphy, like you with that 40 years ago. It's all here now, all your incarnations. So that when you get all done with the last one, you realize nothing happened anyway. I mean, I'm pushing your mind all over the place.
If you could see the universe that way, what would be the difference in the meaning of death? Well, I'm finishing chapter 3. Now, I'm not saying that you should have a mind intellectual overlay that makes everything different that way, not a dishonest imposition of intellect. But for anybody that will subject themselves to simply sitting down quietly and learning how to quiet their mind by allowing the thoughts to come and go. Just as simple a thing as following your breath. Just take 2 minutes now. Bring your awareness to your breath. Just notice the breath. Either notice it going in and out of your nose, or notice it rising and falling in the middle of your abdomen. Pick one or the other and stay with it. Notice the breath going in. Notice the breath going out. And notice the little transition points between the in-breath and the out-breath, and the out-breath and the in-breath. Keep your awareness focused on your breath. Let the rest of the thoughts come and go, just like tiny little insects around a light. If you notice feelings in your body, notice them, and then let them go. If you are thinking about what this is all about, notice that thought, let it go. Come back to your breath. Breathing in, breathing out. The thought we are sitting in a school auditorium in Orange County at a conference, a set of thoughts, notice them, let them go. Floating by like leaves on a stream. Thinking about the future, remembering the past. Thoughts coming, going. Bring your awareness back to your breath. Deeper, quieter. Follow the breath carefully. Follow the in-breath, the moment of turning, the out-breath, the moment of turning. The silence in the room, notice it, let it go. Come back to the breath. The breath is the focal point. It's the primary object. The rest of the universe comes and it goes. Problems come into mind. Notice them. Bring your awareness back to your breath. Staying right in this place now, don't move yet. That is the first method that you use in order to begin to be aware of who you are. You can do it anywhere, anytime. You don't need beads, you don't need priests, you don't need ashrams, you just need your breath. Because while you are following your breath, which is the doorway between form and formless, because between the in-breath and the out-breath, and the out-breath and the in-breath, there is the space. Now let me give you one more exercise. Just find the whole other quality. Focus in the middle of your chest, just as if you had two nostrils, and breathe. Now, as if you were breathing in and out of the middle of your chest, let your nose or your mouth breathe in or out the oxygen. But imagine that your chest is simultaneously breathing in a very soft, very delicate mist. Breathe in, breathe out. When you breathe in, let that mist pour through your body. Let it pour up into your head, to your arms, to your torso, to your legs. And when you breathe out now, breathe out all of the heaviness, all of the tightness, all of the guardedness, all of the disappointment, all of the pain, the loneliness. And then once again, fill in the in-breath with this very, very soft mist. Let it wash through you just as if it were Drano, cleaning through all the tubes. When it dislodges something, a sadness or a doubt or a fear, just breathe it out. Breathe deeply. And then once you feel you have loosened as much of the stuff that holds you back from knowing who you are as you can at this moment, then become like a director of energy and take in this very fine mist, fill your being with it, and then breathe it out and send it towards those beings with your thoughts, send it towards those beings who suffer, whether their suffering be physical, psychological, or spiritual. Just as if you were surrounding them with light. You were surrounding them with a loving space that said, do what you must do, but know that I am here with you. Use the power of your own thought and the openness of your heart to give life and love and space to all beings. And you can get so that every in-breath is a blessing you receive. Every out-breath is a blessing you transmit. With those two exercises, following your breath to quiet your mind, and breathing in and out of the heart to deepen your receiving of love and your compassion outward, you become an environment in which everybody you meet can grow. You become an environment of quietness, of non-judgment, of love, of presence. For you to share the higher channels of consciousness You must know them in your own being. Not with your intellect, but with your being. When Gandhi was on a train that was leaving the station, a reporter rushed up to him and said, "Mahatmaji, would you give me a message to take back to my people?" And Gandhi said, he scribbled on a piece of paper, "My life is my message." To die consciously, you must live consciously. To live consciously, you must have the courage to go inside yourself to find out who you really are. To understand that behind all of the masks of individual differences, you are a being of beauty, of love, of awareness. When Christ said the kingdom of heaven was within, he wasn't just putting you on. When Buddha said each person is the Buddha, he was saying the same thing. Until you can allow your own beauty, your own dignity, your own being, you cannot free another. So if I were giving people one instruction, I would say work on yourself. Have compassion for yourself. Allow yourself to be beautiful. And all the rest will follow. If there are any pressing questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Yes?
A question is asked about the existence of beings on other planets in our universe.
Well, I think that there are many planes of reality, and there are many beings that exist on planes other than the physical plane of reality. I think you're asking a question about the physical plane, about the physical universe, beings on other planets. I know nothing about any of that. I do know that there are beings living on other planes of consciousness that are, and that this is merely another plane. So that you could look at planet Earth, or the physical plane, not Earth, the physical plane, as a certain kind of training ground for people who have certain kinds of work to do. Buddha talked about them as being beings that had one of the five hindrances, that those were the people that took birth on the physical plane, because they needed the kind of grossness of the sandpaper of the experiences of the physical plane to do the certain kind of purification. So, and he said that the five hindrances were lust and greed was one of them, that's just one. Hatred and ill will, agitation, sloth and torpor, which means inertia, and doubt. And that if you didn't have one of those five, you didn't take birth on this plane, you took birth on another plane. So that's who we are to begin with, which makes it us rather a colorful lot. And so in that sense, there is... that this is the earth, and there are other planes that are what are called the heavenly planes. There are all these lokas or planes. In almost every tradition you find these things. And they are all equally as much the projections of desire systems, just subtler and subtler ones all the time. And so beings take birth here and then take birth on other planes. But in answer to your question, I think about the physical universe. I don't know. I don't know. The question was, would I have been open to the Eastern mystical tradition had I not had such extensive experience with psychedelic chemicals? The answer is that I probably would not have. However, somebody who is now young in this culture now would be able to. In other words, at that time I wouldn't have. Now I might. If I wasn't so encrusted and closed in by the time I'm 47 and have bought a model so tightly that I don't have any space, then I wouldn't be able to hear it now. But now the environment is supportive of hearing this message, while 15 years ago it was not. I think that the psychoanalysis was useful. I'm sure everything in my life has been useful. I mean, I look back on all my experiences now, ones that when I was in the middle of them, I thought, oh, nobody's been cursed like I've been cursed. And then I look back now and say, wow, so that's what that was about. Well, far out. Look at what I learned from that. Isn't that interesting? Right. I tend to think of psychotherapy now as sort of like body and fender repair work. It isn't the essence of my being, but it's good to keep the... You got to honor the whole organism and the personality and the body as well. My diets, all of that stuff is ways of honoring the container I'm in, if you will, which includes my personality. But what happens is that as you start to break the identification to the grosser planes and start to identify with higher and higher awareness in yourself, you find that the individual differences that before were a problem for you are no longer a problem. They are merely a definition of your uniqueness. So that I would say that my neuroses didn't go away. I've just made them my friends. Okay? They're just kind of irrelevant. They're irrelevant friends to have around. Okay? I'm just as neurotic as I ever was. Right? Yes?
This is a question about the relationship between creativity and mental health.
Well, I didn't hear Dr. May yesterday, but I do feel that the Western model of creativity is based on neurosis, and that there is a whole other way to understand creative act, which means, for example, Bach was amazingly non-neurotic. And he certainly was a prolifically creative being, and so have been many creative beings, with very little anxiety. And I understand creativity the way I understand it is. Just as Einstein said, I did not arrive at my understanding of the basic laws of the universe through my rational mind. Rather, he went inward into a higher way of knowing, an intuitive space, another plane of consciousness in which the universe is. Outside of time, it just all is. And then as he comes back from that, what's called a mystical experience, he comes back in, and then his training as a physicist leads him to take that non-conceptual thing and conceive of it into physics. And so a Bach goes into these spaces and comes back, and he hears the whole symphony. It's all there, just like that. And then he just comes back and writes it out. So that my feeling is much less that we are learning versus we are remembering. My feeling is much less that we create rather than we tune to. As far as I'm concerned, the entire universe is within us. We merely have to quiet down enough to hear who we are. And as you become more conscious and less mechanical in the sense of being identified with the things which are within law, like body and personality, which are within deterministic law, as you move into pure awareness, you are freer in that sense, and out of you, every act becomes a creative amalgam of all of the things in the universe. That's what Taoism is about. That's when you see a monk, you can see the way he walks is a creative act, the way he washes a dish is a creative act, his calligraphy is the creative act. You can see just in the form of the movement of the hand the creative act. It isn't now I'll be creative. It's just a creative way of living. It's a way that's in flow with things around you. And that's what that breathing is about. It's about opening you up until you just become part of the force or the flow of the universe. And there's where creativity is from where I'm sitting. Okay.
This is a question about how chakras work.
The chakras or psychic energy foci in the body, of which there are seven in the body and there are some over the head, are a way of conceiving of the process of transformation of consciousness via the route of focusing on energy. Okay? Working with the kundalini or the shakti or the energy or the prana or whatever you want to call it. That's one route of doing it. Okay? Like if you're climbing a mountain, you could take the southern route or the northern route or the eastern route or the western route. One route will be meditation. You could just sit down and follow your breath, and in the course of that, all your chakras will open and all the energy will flow and it'll all happen, and all you did was follow your breath. Or you could do breathing exercises and bring the energy up your spine, the sushumna, another method, the south route. Or you could do service. My route is service, of love and service. I mean, my daily life is my vehicle of coming to God. You are my exercise on myself. That's my vehicle. And I am yours. So that's karma yoga, okay? So it's just another route through. And it is a way. It's a very beautiful way, but it's only another way.
Thank you.